Blog Talk Radio.
We were just talking backstage, and you want me to get more involved. I'm like, yeah, let's clean up the damn hood. Black people and white people, poor black people and poor white people live in the same conditions. Only thing, black people paint on their houses.
It's free advertising.
But, you know, I think the point is people...
If we straighten out ourselves, people would deal with us as human beings. Well, don't you agree? A little bit?
Well, it's
if your kid wants something and his room is dirty, you say, get back and clean up your room. Then tell me what you want.
Cleanliness is always close to godliness. There's no question about that.
Thank you.
But if you live in a certain area of town where they cut off access to capital...
Yes.
And cut off access to
and
jobs.
Don't mean you
and
can't pick up a damn piece of paper in front of your house.
But
and don't mean that.
But pick it up.
My mother used to make me clean up my yard and the 2 yards next door.
But I think it's important. You should be to pick up paper and pick up a paycheck. Pick up paper and pick up a plumber.
And we still picked up the paper. My daddy was on strike, and I'm out there sweeping away, man.
Well, my grandmother used to make us clean the dirt with a brush broom. Having said that, even that is no substitute for the right to an education,
a
job,
and healthcare. You're right, but we got to get on our own stuff a little bit.
Well,
we got to smack our own kids upside the head every now and then. Thank you very much.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor, all hail funkin' lesson, sweet tongue grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold, born in a cosmos, where no time and space do exist, vibe in the midst of the chaos, mortals label me as a logger.
You're traveling to another radio show, a broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Diva, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Good evening, folks. This is the Midweek Review edition of Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. And as the title mentions it, or the title states, all that I care about is the Winter Soldier is coming up in about 2 days. And you know something, folks? I am immensely elated, happy, but I'm also frustrated. I try not to use the word angry so much, but maybe this time I'll slip through and say that I'm angry because of Yahoo and some of these websites that are just giving away major plot lines, giving away inferences relating to the after-credit scenes. I'm not going to mention some of the things that are out there, but holy smokes, man. Holy smokes. We can't catch a break. You know, we always talk about spoiler alert and that kind of thing, and that's a business unto itself. But now, you know, 2, 3, 4 days before the damn movie's about to be released, they're giving away major spoilers before anyone has gotten a chance to see this film. I mean, there's no hope for us, folks. There's no hope. The selfies, the spoiler alerts, all kinds of shenanigans. It is what it is. Folks, again, don't mind my ranting. I am the Afro Nerd. This is the Week in Review. We're going to go to a quick Nerdcore group. And also, listeners who are welcome to call in a few moments before the show actually starts, they'll probably hear a pre-show sequence. It's still the same damn thing. I may be a little bit more loose-lipped, maybe, but I'm still the same guy. And I said behind the scenes, I'm going to check if I'm Ghanaian. I'm going to check. I'm going to do the DNA testing post-haste. because I'm telling you, I told the captain, I suspect Negroes, because I know Negroes, they are going to go out there and find out with the swiftness if they have some kind of connection to Lupita, to this young man who was accepted into all eight Ivy League schools, high cognition, definitely disputes the notion of inferiority, which has always been a joke anyway. Always been a joke. Anyway, on with the show, folks. Quick urban alternative groove. This is a shout-out to the Oracle, his favorite artist. 99.5 won't do, which I suspect that this Ghanaian's parents told him that. 99.5 won't do. We'll be right back. Let's groove. You know, the late, great Luther Vandross made a song called Dance With My Father. And I will confess that I did dance with the Oracle to this kind of music. And I love it. And, you know, when you are a part of the landscape that we deal with on a daily basis with the minstrels and the sorry hip-hop, when you listen to this music, it really hits home. It really resonates. And you really get to the core of the soul. That was what Black Excellence on an entertainment tip was really about. So, and I also have to channel this young man from Long Island, Kwasi Enine. I suspect his parents said 99.5 just won't do. Folks, this is Afro Radio. The midweek edition of Afro Radio, featuring Captain Kirk. Speaking of the Captain, forget about all that, you know, what part of the ship you're on. Let's just get into it. Captain, your time is now. Let's get to it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. its continuing mission to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
Now, this will be a total exercise in futility. A total exercise in futility, but at times, futility can be amusing, especially when I decide to listen to the playback. It can be very amusing. Now, it's ironic that the great Afro Nerd was talking about spoilers, because somebody asked the captain this week, how do you feel about spoilers? Now, what people don't realize with me, I can be rather caustic, cynical, bastard at times. So you got to be careful when you decide to ask the captain questions. So they decided to ask the captain about spoilers. So I said, what do you mean, spoilers? So what do you mean? They said, you know, the stuff, you know, when they reveal information with movies. I said, that stuff. That's what you mean? I said, you can spoil things, definitely. But who's spoiling what for who? They looked at me befuddled. I said to them, I will slow it down for you so you understand. If it is an original screenplay, someone can definitely spoil things for you. But with a lot of these movies, not all of them, with a lot of these movies, not all of them, with a lot of these movies, not all of them, there's a tendency for them to be some great novel that they adapted as a screenplay, and then it's a theatrical release. With comic book movies, you read the comic book, and then you go into the theater. This is why the geeks and nerds sit in the movie theater at times with their arms folded, and then they have a conniption afterwards saying they didn't get the story right. Because you read the comic book, you know the story, you know the way it's supposed to go. And I'll go even further. Green Lantern, you know the story on Green Lantern. Ghost Rider, you knew the story on Ghost Rider. Man of Steel, you knew the story going in with Man of Steel. Batman, Dark Knight, you know these stories. Batman's not really going to get away. You know he gets away. Why? Because he's Batman. Now, that being said, I'll share my own empirical evidence. The Hunger Games movie. I was sitting in the Hunger Games movie saying to myself, why do I know what's going to happen 30 minutes in advance? And I couldn't for the life of me understand this. I said, wait a minute, boom, boom, boom. Did I see this? I said, I'm good, but I'm not that good. I said, no one is that good. No way. And then I'm bare tapping my fingers. I said, oh, I read the book. So in essence, I spoiled it for myself. And this is why people, by their own admission, from time to time, how many times have you went to the movie and said, the book was many times better than the movie? The comic book was many times better than the movie. Do you know why the comic book or the novel was many times better than the movie? Because, wage slave zombie, you did not know the story. Let me repeat that. You did not know the story, but you still have to see the movie. That's all. But you go in already spoiled. You are spoiled already. The only time you do not get spoiled is when it is an original screenplay. Now, that being said, we have The Winter Soldier dropping Friday. Now, I didn't see the movie, but look, I do know George St. Pierre, who is an MMA fighter, who used to be the UFC champion, is in the movie, right? Logical sense, because he's in the movie, that Captain America and George St. Pierre is going to have a fight. That's logical. I didn't see the movie as of yet. I will see it come Friday. Come on. You understand? We already know pretty much how this movie is going to go, but we still have to see more or less how it's set up. So all you're really doing is playing along, because a lot of times, not all the time, a lot of times, not all the time, you have spoiled it for yourself, my friends. And that's the reality of it. This already, with a lot of these movies, you spoil it yourself. And this is why The Wage Slave says, Hunger Games and other type of movies, the book was much better than the movie. Because when you read the book, you didn't know the story. And this is why you're rushing to get the next comic book. You read the first issue. You have to get the second issue, third. You do not know the story. And this is why geeks and nerds have a conniption when they do not get the story right when they sit in the movie theater. Who has spoiled what for who? All these people are doing now, because it's not an original screenplay, is adding fuel to the fire, more kerosene to it. So people, let's stay here in reality and realize what's going on. Winter Soldier goes down Friday. It's on. We still have to see how they chop it up and put it together. And I'm telling you, I didn't see the movie, but I put my name on it that it's going to be a good movie. Back over to Sir Afro Nerd. Let's get it started, my friend. Ta-ta-ta-ta-ta.
Indubitably. Captain, listen, I agree with you. I agree with you. You're right, because for the Winter Soldier specifically, is based on the famed comic book writer Ed Brubaker, who has a really penchant for being able to write spy novels, and he's really good for the spy genre. So you're right, we do know how it's supposed to go down. My only issue is with Marvel films specifically, it's the after credit scene that we don't know about, because we don't know what direction they're going to go in. We don't know which character they're going to introduce. And it's that surprise that we look forward to as the geeks and the nerds. And they already told you pretty much, I saw 4 days ago, without even going to a comic book site. If I go to a comic book genre website, that's on me, because I know that's all they're going to talk about. But when I go to the Daily News or the Yahoo or the New York Times, and their opening story is like, blammo, the after credit scene shows that this is the next character that's going to be introduced. That is a truth, the shock and the surprise, because you don't know where the link is going to go. You don't know who the next character is going to be. You don't know what the next story arc is going to be. That's the part that infuriates me. But as far as the actual main storyline, you're absolutely 100% correct. If I found something about the actual storyline, I probably would not be that upset because, well, you know, I don't look at Walking Dead because I read the book. That's a perfect example. I don't look at Walking Dead because I'm on issue 130 or whatever it is. So it's difficult for me to be shocked about an active story that I'm reading. But for the after-credit scenes, I don't know what they're going to do, and they told me anyway. That's the part that infuriates me. Anyway, folks, this might as well have been the comic shop. And mind you, we'll give you our full-fledged review Saturday at 6 p.m. And something we mentioned after the, I should say, behind the scenes, that we have scheduled classic hip-hop musician from the legendary Brand Nubians, Lord Jamar, who now models himself, he has self-dubbed himself the hip-hop conservative. Hip-hop conservative. Now, I suspect he means conservative in a different way, but he has said that he uses the term conservative because he's desperate to conserve some of the original tenets of hip-hop. And he has a problem with the current state of hip-hop. There seems to be an agenda that's completely the antithesis of the hip-hop that many of us are familiar with. So we should expect him next Wednesday, the 9th. That should be a very fiery, informative broadcast. I can't wait to speak to this gentleman, Lord Jamar, Brand Nubians. All right. You know, at the top of the show, I was talking about this young man who's a local wunderkind, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, Kwasi Enan, 17-year-old Kwasi Enan, that bears the distinction of having been accepted to all 8 Ivy League schools. I'm not sure anyone has actually done that feat. I think the captain made reference that someone in the late 60s might have actually accomplished that same feat. But it's very, 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 very rare to be accepted at all 8 schools. And mind you, he was also accepted at other schools that were of an equal tier that were not Ivy League, but of Ivy League caliber. I believe Duke and a few other schools that were of a similar caliber. So he is to be commended, definitely. There's an attached addendum story to this that I will unpack in a few moments. Let's go to the news clip courtesy of ABC News, and then I'm going to go a little bit deeper into this young man because I think there's an interesting anecdote that's attached to his ethnicity. Again, all kudos to this young man of color. Wishing the best. He appears to be in a stellar, truly stellar trajectory. This is truly also a blue area segment. Good news, good news, good news. So this is ABC News. Give me a few moments. We'll be right back.
I love this next story. It's about a young man who may well be the most wanted high school student in America in the best possible way. He's trying to decide where to go to college, and every single Ivy League school wants him. ABC's John Mueller has the story.
High school seniors are deciding where to go to college this fall. One incredibly talented New York 17-year-old has the decision of a lifetime. Which one of the Ivy League colleges should he go to? Because he got into all 8.
I simply thought I would apply. I'm still going to apply to all 8. I know it's crazy.
Harvard, Brown, Princeton, Columbia, all of the very prestigious Ivy League schools are vying for Kwasi Enan of Long Island, an academic jackpot.
When he first told me he was going to be applying to all 8, my head was spinning. He's just that quality kid.
He scored a near-perfect 2250 on the SAT out of 2400 and is in the top 2% of his class. Only 5.9% of over 35,000 students that apply to Harvard actually get in, 7% to Yale. So it's extremely rare to get into all of them.
Appreciation and thankfulness for everyone who helped you and all your teachers for helping you with your grades and whatnot, all the way down to your counselor, and then lastly, of course, your family, parents, for all the support they do.
The ambitious senior is a violinist who plans to study medicine, as did both of his parents. So where will Enan go this fall?
I think my preference is Yale. I seem to embody all the kind of things I want in college. I still have to compare all these schools, wonderful schools.
It is the kind of problem every college kid and their parents would love to have. Kwasi says those financial aid packages will definitely be big factors in his decision. And by the way, he did apply to a few state schools and Duke University, and yeah, he got into those too. Nice when Duke University is your fallback. Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
I think he's going to set up a bidding war between those schools this morning.
Pretty awesome.
Really.
Now he's famous too, so there you go.
Absolutely. That's a great story. Thank you, John.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, truly an Afro nerd, and this is a story that's been bandied about quite a bit behind the scenes, and I'm getting a lot of emails, and this is the kind of story that is something that we would, of course, support and herald. It's so much about what we are about, and, you know, listen, his future is pretty much set. The thing that I find interesting is that when this was discussed on YouTube, I noticed a few African-Americans that were saying, oh, he's African-American. They were very dismissive about his ethnicity, like, oh, he's African-American. And then you saw people also coming in to check that and say, oh, no, he's not African-American. He's from Ghana, or his ethnicity is Ghanaian. So you saw how eloquent he is, 17 years old. I mean, how many times do you hear the average 17-year-old, cross-ethnically, mind you, who has that kind of elocution? Very rarely. Very rarely. Now, what makes this even more distinct, Captain, is I did a little research on this young man and where he's from. The first thing I noticed was that his high school is in Mastic Beach, Long Island. And Mastic Beach is essentially to be kind, it's a lower tier, predominantly white area. Further out east of Long Island, you have pockets of white lower class individuals. The actual school is William Floyd, the William Floyd School District in Mastic Beach, Long Island. So when I first heard Mastic, if you hear Mastic or Shirley or Riverhead, those are, you know, they're not. That's the South Shore. Is that the South Shore? I think it is the South Shore. But it's not Old Field, you know. It's not the East Egg of Long Island. We're not talking about Kings Point or Sands Point or Upper Brookville or Mutton Town. Notice how I know these wealthy areas. Oh, boy, boy, do I know these wealthy areas. Not from there. This school district is not a school district that's known to produce someone with that kind of intellectual prowess. So it makes you wonder, how does someone perform so exemplary from a district, from a school even, from a school? I was speaking to a colleague earlier today, and he said that he's familiar with the area, and he said that, you know, this area really, you know, he told me that the school he was familiar with, a lot of dregs go to that school. So it makes it even more of a wonderment that this young man has been able to achieve scholastically from a school that really doesn't produce scholars like this. Now, this is where you talk about his parents. I've been reading a number of different articles about this young man, and it mentioned that, I guess in a colloquial sense, the articles referred to his parents as helicopters. Helicopters because they were constantly hovering over this young man. They were helicopters. He's proficient with the violin as an instrument. Parents are also in the medical field from Ghana. Different cultural expectations. This is something that I wouldn't doubt that at some point the beauteous Amy Chua, notice how I said beauteous because I do find her attractive, Amy Chua from The Triple Package and Tiger Mom, she's probably going to dig in, but she's made reference to, I think, Nigerian. The Triple Package talks about this whole ethnic-cultural component, not racial, but ethnic-cultural component. And as I said, jokingly, but also seriously, Blackie, and I say that colloquially, because we're talking about, I've mentioned this before, some people take umbrage when I use the term Blackie. I'd say Blackie, Whitey, Brownie. Those terms, my way of being somewhat of a pejorative, these terms are meant to denote or connote typical ethnic tribal thinking. Typical tribal thinking. And I suspect, Captain, that part of the African American experience within the last 40 to 50 years, well, I can go deeper. I can go further than that. But I'll say it's been intensified in some way, except for maybe the 60s and early part of the 70s, for us to move away from our Africanness, to move away from our – to be somewhat ashamed. We've gone through periods of this. In the 60s and 70s, we were embracing it. And then at some point, we started to pull away. But part of the African-American experience has been this push and pull with real African identity. And we were taught, to our detriment, that to be African is a negative. And we would always separate ourselves from the continent. Many of us would. Many of us do. Many of us have ventured forward towards Africa and trying to find out more about the culture and the continent. And there's there's a contingent of Black folk that are going through the DNA testing. Many of these online websites that make it a little bit easier. And then also Roots was a moment in time. We have had pockets in history where we try to really get closer to the continent, but it is very difficult. There's been such a Western immersion, Captain, that we are so westernized to our detriment to a certain degree. But when you see this young man's accomplishments, and when you hear about Amy Chua, when she emphasizes these cultural, again, these cultural components, he's going to be really pushing the African thing now, which is so much of an irony to me. It is so ironic now. And even the fact that you see how the culture, I'm talking about American culture, has really laid out the red carpet for Lupita Nyong'o. Notice these names also, Captain. You don't have that, like, not you, let's say, I'm going to speak for myself. I'm pretty sure you feel the same way. I don't have that reticence. I feel comfortable about Nyong'o, Kwasi, Barack, not Taekwon, Sharik, LaQuisha. There's a distinction. There's a distinction. Kwasi Enin is going to be able to put that name on a resume. But once you see Tyreek Jenkins, it's different. It's different. It's different than Kwasi Enin. There you go. I know I'm going to get some problems, but I know what I'm talking about. Watch it. Watch what happens. What are your thoughts, Captain?
Well, here's the thing on culture, all right? Now, we have to go back to the meme course 101. What are memes? Memes are ideas that you can replicate. And I've always said DNA is a double helix. So let's explain. Double helix is just a fancy name for spiral structure for the uninitiated. DNA sends and receives information. What is an idea? It's information. So in essence, your culture slightly changes your DNA, and you're locked into things via your DNA because your DNA receives information. Now, I know the nurturers and the direct DNA people do not like this because the nurturers like to say they're right. The DNA people like to say they're right. But the problem is that's not what the science says. The science says both of you are right. It takes both. Now, the question is, how much can the DNA change in order for you to do things? That's the question that's open to debate. It's not whether one is better than the other. You need both. To put it simply, you're a byproduct of your DNA and your environment. But the environment changes you on the DNA level. So does your culture. Okay, Ghana, different culture. Even though they're in America, the household is run a certain way. He is bombarded with certain memes. Yes, he was born a certain way, DNA people, but he also has the environment that bombards him with certain memes that changes him so he can carry out at the manifestation level. Now, the most educated nationality is who? The Nigerians. The Nigerians have a different culture from the gormless feral menstrual beast, black, that walks around here in America. Not all blacks, but you know the ones that I'm talking about. Okay? Situation, yeah. Different culture. This doesn't mean that all Nigerians are automatically better, but the culture transmits memes, environment, to the DNA. So, at the manifestation level, they manifest differently. Simply put. So that's the whole course right there. So that's what you have playing out here. So what we have, black people, what we're doing here, it's put right in your face what we're doing from the culture standpoint, because the memes that are emitted onto us doesn't work on a grand scale. Will not work. Will not ever work based on the science. It's right in your face. It's right in your face. It's right in your face. I cannot say it any plainer. So this is what we have happening right before your eyes. And this is a beautiful thing. We need more of this. Now, to channel what AfroNerd is saying, I think the more intelligent black people will look to ride with this, attach themselves to this. But you will have a certain faction that will not, simply because they can't. they just can't. It's rather exclusionary, you know, to a certain extent. So, you know, I definitely say the more intelligent of us will look, you know. Maybe Griot and these places will say, hey, we're this, we're that. Let's push this now. But this is what the powers that be are grabbing onto. Who runs Harvard? Who runs Yale? Who runs Hollywood? This is what they're grabbing onto. So let's go ahead and follow suit. That's all I'm saying. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
And you know what disturbs me, Captain, is that I don't know why there's such a reticence to the discussion of culture. Culture is a lot less, how can I put this? Let me be more clear. Culture is a lot more malleable than race. Race is immutable.
Mm-hmm.
Race is immutable. But culture can change. We've seen cultural changes. We've seen cultural shifts. It's funny how, hopefully this might be a trend, but we're starting to see more Africans, not African Americans, but more Africans really moving forward on a scholastic level, business level. I mean, I've heard of, I think a few months ago, there were articles that were referencing that in some factions, Africa may be in a trajectory to be the new China. I've been hearing Africa is the new China. I've heard, I was listening to Pitbull, the rapper Pitbull, on Howard Stern a few days ago, and I heard this before, but he said something about the Cubans, because he's of Cuban descent. Cubans are called the Jews of the Caribbean. So, and I think Cubans are also in that cultural lineup that is in Amy Chua's book. So it just takes a few to create the meme, as you put it, and we do need a meme. Things can just flip, Captain. I mean, people forget that Asians were not always perceived the way that they are now. They just were not. You know, a lot of poor representation, a lot of jokes and mocking and that kind of thing 60, 70 years ago, they were not perceived this way. But they dug in and they made some changes. They wanted to make that change. And there's got to be something, and I'm just trying to figure out, I mentioned this before, Captain, there seems to be this hesitance we don't know what the bottom is. I'm always a believer, if you use an analogy like someone who's on drugs or who's an alcoholic, that he or she has to hit rock bottom in order for that person to make constructive changes. And that's what I need to see. That's what we need to see in Black American culture. Where is the bottom? Because once the bottom has been reached, then we can start seeing these changes, and maybe we can start making a meme. And again, the Asians were not perceived the way that they are now 50, 60, 70 years ago. There was a cultural shift. I'm not trying to figure out, when will the Black man have his cultural shift? Black American, because it seems like the African, and again, the African wasn't always perceived the way he is. I mean, now people, if you notice, Captain, people are saying this guy or gal is African. Plainly, they're making that distinction between African and someone who's an African in America. So, you know, I can't call it. Anyway, folks, enough of that. The call-in number, once again, this is the Midweek in Review edition of Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. It's 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. We have a lot more to discuss, a lot more topics. Let's go to a quick groove. And when we get back, you know, more discourse. This is Sharon Jones. Sharon Jones, giving the people what they want. That's the new CD. And this is Get Up and Get Out, Sharon Jones. We'll be right back.
Night. You leave before I see the morning light.
fabulous Sharon Jones. Get up and get out. She has a new CD. I don't know if CD's dated. I guess iTunes downloads is probably the operative terminology. Give the people what they want is the new download. I think it's probably the operative term. Folks, this is Afro featuring Captain Kirk giving you the best of psychedelic soul, urban alternative, black rock, Afro punk. The call-in number, as always, as ever, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. I just want to mention one more thing, and then we'll move along. You know, I was thinking of James Watson, and I think about James Watson, Dr. James Watson, on occasion, because this is a noted geneticist, and his name is heavily attached to the unraveling of the human genome, of actually decrypting the human genome. So this is a geneticist, and he's also affiliated with the eugenics movement, and there's a whole Cold Spring, Long Island facility that's noted for going back to the 30s, when this whole notion of, you know, Nazism and genetic superiority and eugenics and that kind of thing. So he's wrapped up in all of that, but, you know, he's most noted as of late because of this decoding of the human genome. Anyway, a few years ago, he said something kind of as an off-the-cuff remark about black inferiority, and he said something about Africans and sub-Saharan Africa and how, you know, this, you know, black folks are inferior, and he kind of backtracked because it's a politically incorrect, really a politically incorrect statement. And then, you know, because he decoded the human genome, I believe his own DNA strand was available online, and someone else was able to decode his DNA and found that he had a high percentage of Africoid DNA. I think somewhere around 20%, 25%, which is considerable. Matter of fact, it's enough to colloquially be called black. So he meekly, if you go by the one drop rule, and listen, we still kind of sort of go by this rule in this country. So he meekly disappeared into the ethosphere when he made that comment. All of a sudden, hey, you're 20% African. What happened to all that inferiority talk? He just went away, poof. So just imagine if there was more of an impetus, ladies and gentlemen, to invest, as far as the African continent, to invest in the human condition as opposed to, well, just investing in the human condition as opposed to natural resources, or to perceive the human condition as a natural resource as opposed to oil. I think there's even more oil talk in Africa, and you know what that means. There's going to be European powers all over that place again, basically carving up and trying to figure out a way to get that oil from Africa. So Africa's on the come up, but we kind of see where this is going. Human lives are very dispensable in Africa as well as in America. All right. Anyway, you know, the last show, I played a clip from the Rob Redding show. I called in, clowned. I have a really tough skin, so it's no big deal. And I'm not going to replay the clip because of time constraints, but you know, I've had emails and people Facebook book me, and they really kind of enjoyed it as entertainment. And it was about the Kobe Bryant affair, where Kobe Bryant essentially came out as an individual and said, hey, you know, I'm not going to ride with all black folk. I'm saying this in a paraphrasing kind of way. I'm not going to ride with all black folk just because they're black. I'm going to sit back, weigh the facts, use my intelligence, and not just rush in like a fool and just be somewhat more intelligent about it. So he has a friend, noted sports analyst, also Queens native, Stephen A. Smith, ESPN Stephen A. Smith. And Stephen A. Smith at times ends up being somewhat of his mouthpiece, where he reinterprets what Kobe meant to say. So he was on Arsenio recently, and he was very succinct about the whole affair. And Arsenio weighed in, and Arsenio said, you know, there's merit here. There's merit here. So I'm going to let Stephen A. Smith do the talking. And he essentially said what I was trying to say, but on that program I was not given the courtesy of completion because that's not what you're going to get. This is what high cognition and reasoning means, and not being – and Captain talks about this a lot, this whole notion of groupthink. There's got to be room for people to think independently. We can't all be tribesmen. We just can't. So this is Stephen A. Smith on Kobe, on Trayvon, on Arsenio Hall. Hold on.
When was the last time you spoke with Kobe Bryant?
Today?
Oh, real cool then. Let's tell them about the New Yorker March 2014 issue and why it's created such a controversy. I actually have the quote, but you might want to say something before I...
No, I mean, he just, you know, go ahead and read the quote because that's what he hollered at me about.
Yeah, Kobe's quote was, I won't react to something just because I'm supposed to, comma, because I'm an African-American.
He was asked about the Trayvon Martin situation, obviously, for those who don't know, the 17-year-old kid who was killed in Florida, gunned down, and the assailant got off. And essentially what is the situation, Kobe Bryant spoke about it because he was asked about it, and he brought up how the Miami Heat had brought attention to it by putting on all their hoodies and bringing attention to it.
So what did they do, an Instagram?
They did an Instagram, and they did a photo, all of them having their hoodies on, because they wanted to bring attention to the fact that this young African-American kid had been gunned down, and they wanted the situation investigated, which it ultimately was, and the guy was tried, and ultimately he got off. Kobe Bryant basically has the attitude that justice should be equal, no matter what, whether in regards to race or gender. And that was his position. All he was trying to say was that, excuse me, let's listen to the facts first. Let's make sure we know everything before we jump out and judge accordingly. You can't sit there and take somebody's side just because they're an African-American. You can't turn around and assume or think that people from other races are going to ever be fair to you if you're not willing to exercise fairness yourself. Lay back, listen to the facts, and then accord justice where it should be served. And I don't have a problem with that. Me personally, I definitely think that he was right on point with that. I know a lot of black people are going to be upset about that, and as I told you before.
And are upset.
Well, like I told you, when I
Black Twitter went crazy.
When I give a damn, I'll let you know. The fact of the matter is that we, as a nation of people, as a community, we make up 14% of the population in the United States of America. Mm-hmm. We are not even the dominant minority anymore. That's the Hispanic population in this country. We have to recognize that we are outnumbered. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that, even though the system sometimes is unjust and sometimes is unfair, it doesn't accord us the license to be unfair as well. We have to make sure that if we're shining a light on issues, that we're just as fair-minded as we're asking other people to be towards us. Because if we're not willing to do that, then we don't have a strong argument. And if we don't have a strong argument, it's impossible for us to win. And we're already a losing proposition to begin with because we're outnumbered. So you rise to the occasion by making sure you exercise the level of fairness and justice that you want others to bring your way. And if somebody is speaking on that level, I have no problem with it. That's not to say that racism doesn't exist. Of course it exists. We understand that. But we've come a long way as a society. We have an obligation to recognize that instead of always getting emotional and assuming that somebody is against us because of race. And I think a lot of us in this audience and throughout this country know that.
You know what just popped back in my head? Patience. I really agree with Kobe on the patience element
yes.
of it and hearing all the facts, because I personally got in trouble. I'm a little older than you, but there was a situation that's known as Tawana Brawley on the East Coast.
Yeah.
I remember when I first heard about it, I went hook, line, and sinker with an opinion, and I was irate. And then I found out my emotions...
Well, for me, it gets...
Remember Tawana.
Yes, Tawana Brawley in New York, no doubt. But this is the thing that really resonates with me. You have to understand that when you make the mistake of jumping to emotional conclusions and being factually incorrect, your cachet diminishes. Because as a result, once you make that mistake, you don't get to come back from that. So you have to make sure that your emotions are deliberate and measured. You have to make sure that you do everything that you can to look into the facts before you jump to conclusions. You've got to pursue the facts to the best of your ability. That's all Kobe Bryant is saying. That's all any of us should be saying. Of course, you're a black man. You look at a young 17-year-old black boy. He got shot down. I was ticked off. I was instantly saying, man, we got to look into this because justice needs to be served. It would behoove us to make sure that we put forth our due diligence when it comes to being factual as opposed to emotional, because people use our emotions against us to diminish us and minimize us, and it works against us, not for us.
You and I both know Roland Martin,
yes.
Very bright man. I think
right.
The good thing about the world we live in is that we can agree to disagree.
That's right.
I hear on Twitter, Roland and Kobe locked horns.
Yeah.
And what jumped out at me is Roland referenced Jim Brown, which was the conversation that took place here.
Yes. This notion that because you're black, you're supposed to think a certain way. You got to understand, we're not one monolithic group where we all look and think and act alike. That's ridiculous.
That's all good.
So what?
That's essentially what I was trying to impart to Rob Redding, and it didn't go over that well. And now I'm hearing, Captain, that there is a gentleman from the Nation of Islam, I believe he's a Nation of Islam, where he's trying to boycott sponsors of Kobe Bryant because Kobe Bryant has a difference of opinion. So I'm wondering, you know, where's the boycott for the folks that are really doing more than just having an opinion? You know, we know that Rick Ross lost his Reebok endorsement when he talked about giving Molly to a woman on record and then, you know, essentially having sexual relations. It's a rape on wax. You know, he didn't really give an apology for that. And I think that it was mostly white women that came out on the forefront on this because they looked at it as a women's issue and not necessarily a racial thing. But even black women, I didn't really see them really get on top of that. And when you think about, you know, I'm going to the regular cast of characters. When I think about Lil Wayne and what he said about Emmett Till on wax, that came and went. I think there was apologies and maybe even monies that had to be allocated to, you know, to the family. You know, but there was really no outcry to shut some of this stuff down. But, you know, we're hearing music. There's a he's a singer, I guess. I got to be more specific. Kind of a new guy on the scene. His name is August Alsina. And they give him a lot of airplay locally here in New York. August Alsina. And he has a song, a very Trey Song-ish sounding. You know, there's no originality in this game anymore, Captain. And the song is called I Love This S. I Love This S. And the song, if you look at the lyrics, he blatantly and bluntly says, I love to smoke and drink. Why, you know, smoke and drink and get high. And I mean, it's not even one of those anti-smoke and drink songs. It's a song, it's an ode to smoking and drinking in a melodic way. And this is routine, regular rotation on urban radio. No one's boycotting this guy. The stuff that actually establishes, once what we talked about in the last segment, that actually establishes culture and themes and memes, we don't get on top of that. But a celebrity, an individual that just has an opinion, that's really a reasoned opinion, we don't like how he thinks, so now we got to boycott a sponsor. You see how we're able to just skip over a whole lot of people for nonsense? Let me give more specifics on this. This is from yourweb.com, E-U-R-W-E-B, yourweb.com. Civil rights activist Najee Ali, Islamic Hope, the acronym H-O-P-E, is calling for a boycott of all products that NBA All-Star Kobe Bryant endorses. This includes his jerseys and signature gym shoes. The call for the national boycott is in response to Bryant's negative comments concerning the Miami Heat support of the Trayvon Martin family. The March 31st issue of The New Yorker, Bryant discussed life and race of Ben McGrath. When McGrath asked Bryant's opinion on the Miami Heat's show of solidarity with Martin in the now iconic hoodie photo, the L.A. Lakers star stated, "I won't react to something just because I'm supposed to, because I'm an African-American," Bryant said. "That argument doesn't make any sense to me. So we want to advance as a society and a culture, but say if something happens to an African-American, we immediately come to his defense, yet you want to talk about how far we progressed as a society? Well, we progress as a society, then don't jump to somebody's defense just because they're African-American. You sit and you listen to the facts just like you would in any other situation, right? So I won't assert myself." Then this guy, Najee Ali, references Bryant's rape case or rape allegation case a few years back and how the African-American community supported him. So now I guess he's looking at Bryant in a disingenuous way. You know, maybe he has a point. Maybe. But I don't know. Did the African-American community really go all out for that case, Captain?
Well, they did unify to a certain extent. You know, they went in. We saw how powerful that the Black caucus can be when they direct some of their energy towards a situation. I don't know if you would call it going all out, but definitely they did. They were able to, you know, bring in notice to what was going on based on their actions. I wouldn't definitely call it going all out, you know, pertaining to the case. Now, but here's the thing. Here's the thing. That standing aside, the biggest thing we get out of this and what has been said, and this is something we speak about on this show at ad nauseum, is the emotions. Emotions can skew the facts. Now, what you have to understand with emotions, that emotions are vectors. What does that mean? They have magnitude and they have directions. Simply put, how much of the emotion and where it's directed to, who, what, when, and where, who is going to get it. Love, we know, has a blinding effect. What do I mean by that? It's an emotion, right? We will say that. When you're in love, or should I say standing in love, because when you're no longer standing in love, you could just walk off. When you're in, you're in. You can forget about it. So when you're standing in love with a woman, you have a tendency to see, you cannot see the wrong. Or you see the wrong, but it's okay. And your friends will tell you, and family members, they shake their head. They're going, I don't know why he's with this woman. Then when you get out of love, step off, you start to get a clearing effect. And then if you start to develop hatred, hatred now has a different effect. It has a seeing effect. You're allowed to see things that you normally could not see when you have a hatred for a person. But you cannot have blind hatred because it can blind you to things also. Hence the terminology love-hate relationship. You see how that works? Love-hate relationship. But the point is you have to check emotions in order to get at the facts, at anything, because the power that emotions have, they can blind you. They can skew the facts. You don't see certain things. You have to check it at the door. That's why they have a screening process that doesn't really work, but they say it does work when they're dealing with the judicial system. You know, they have a screening process when they bring you in to be a juror and everything else. Let's see if he's biased. Really what they're looking for is an emotional bias. They'll say, well, is he racist and everything else? But that's all tied up into your emotions also. That's what they're trying to get rid of because of what emotions do. So anytime you have facts, you have to check your emotions. This is why in the police department, they always say when two people walk in, you have your story, you have this person's story. Now let's look at the facts in order to get at the truth. Because you're coming towards me emotional. This person's coming towards me emotional. Somebody shot somebody. Let's see what's going on. And that's what we can learn from this. It's not an easy thing to do. It takes practice. It takes a lot of practice. But that's what you have to do when you're dealing with the facts. Look at some of these men in our neighborhoods. Not all black men now. Some of them are walking around angry all the time. Some of them. Not all, just some. Can you reason with a person that's always angry? You can't. You cannot. They're angry. So anything you tell them doesn't register. They're just ready to go off. This is why you have to check the emotions. Then we can look at the facts and see what's going on. Then make a movement based on the facts. Real simple, not an easy thing to do, my friends. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, you know, I just think that it's unfortunate that we just seem to be able to have this. And this is, like, as you said, ad nauseum, we talk about this, but I wish there were more outlets that would unpack it the way that we're unpacking this notion of people being motivated by opinions and not by, like real-world issues that are really affecting people. I think BA even spoke about this, where, you know, having a problem with Clarence Thomas's philosophy or his political bent and being motivated to move on that is a whole different animal than moving on cultural components. What Nicki Minaj represents as a pop culture figure is different than what Clarence Thomas represents or what Larry Elder represents. But we're more motivated, or even with Kobe Bryant, you know, he's a pop culture figure too. You know, dude with his athletic prowess, which is predominantly what he's known for, this is his opinion. And we're so uncomfortable with his opinion that we're ready to boycott this guy. But we're not able to boycott Nicki Minaj or radio programmers or record companies, these carnival reality shows that depict black folk in the most heinous light. We can't seem to do. I don't hear a peep about that. But for one man's opinion, we're ready to rock and roll. I just don't get it. And I wish someone would explain that to me. No one's confronting. I don't hear people confronting these people. Say, listen, knock it off. Get something going that really matters, as opposed to a person being entitled to think the way that he thinks. Kobe Bryant's thought process doesn't affect me the way that a Rick Ross song or someone that takes a dump on iconic historical figures. It is what it is. I want to mention something. I don't have a clip for this, but I just find it an interesting story when it comes to commerce, the corporate structure, and what they really think about you. There's a young man from Switzerland. His name is Sammy Wassim. I think he's Swiss and of Indian descent. 21 years of age. But at the age of 15, he is such a fan of Ferrari, the sports car, famed sports car and race car manufacturer, that I believe his father, as well as the son, again, Sammy, these two developed and were the administrators of their own Facebook fan club for Ferrari. Thing became so popular that they had over 500,000 likes, 500,000 followers for the Ferrari Facebook page. Ferrari didn't have a Facebook page. Now, nowadays, you know, you're hearing more and more companies that are a bit more savvy, these corporations, and they have a Facebook presence. You know, if it's Nestle, if it's Coca-Cola or Pepsi, they have Facebook pages. I mean, it's still, you know, you're still dealing with brick-and-mortar, real-world companies that have been around for decades, if not a century or more. And they're slow on the uptick when it comes to social media. So anyway, Ferrari, that makes muy expensive cars. Muy, 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 muy expensive cars. They intervened and, you know, gave like a half a thank you to young Master Wasim, or Wasim, I think his name is not, young Master Wasim. And they bogarted, to use a colloquial term, bogarted his Facebook captain, took over the administrative inner workings of this Facebook. Once they did the work, they did, I think they took, you know, a couple of years. Because he's 21 now, so he did this at 15. So it was their work, their adulation, that created the following on this thing. They didn't want to hire them. Now, there have been other companies where the fan base and the support came from civilians, and instead of suing the civilians, they say, you know what? You come work for us. I believe there was a, I forgot which sports team. I think it was a baseball team. This gentleman created a website, a fan-based website that had, you know, six-figure numerically, six-figure, not in dollars, but six-figure followers, you know, 100,000, 200,000, half a million, a million followers. You know, when you get that, when you get in that rarefied air, to be acknowledged. You are acknowledged. And a smart business will say, you know what, we'll just bring you on in. We'll give you a stipend, or we'll give you, we'll put you on a payroll. They took over the administration of this Facebook. Not a peep as far as money, didn't hire them. And I believe the Wasims, the father and son, they're suing Ferrari for $11 million for basically back pay. And, you know, you're talking about a cross-claim now. You know, now we're dealing with intellectual property. But Ferrari doesn't want to play nice. Folks are saying that, you know, listen, they might be in a strong position, you know, in a litigation sense. But when it comes to the war of, you know, your fans, of the people that support Ferrari on the outside, the civilians, this could work against them. And it just boggles my mind, why are these guys being hard asses on this, Captain? What is the deal here? I mean, it's an Italian company. It has all that racing history. Everybody wants a Ferrari who can afford it. It's definitely a rich man's car. Yeah, they have 500,000 subscribers to this, or likes for this Facebook thing. They didn't have the foresight to create a Facebook page. They didn't want to hire this young man. This young man loves Ferrari, has all this enthusiasm. Why not hire this guy? What do you think's going on here?
Well, first, what I would like to say is what I would like to see happen. I would like to see, I think $11 million is a bit excessive. I think about $6 million. One big check, and then for the next 10 years, you pay that family $100,000 per year for the next 10 years. That's what I would like to see happen. That's just me in a nutshell at this given point. But I think Ferrari, old ways, not adapting to new ways, they said, well, most of these people that buy our cars, and of course, Ferrari's a super rich company. Most of these people that buy our cars, they don't have a Facebook page, anything like that. These people that are coming to this page and everything is not really the people that would be buying our cars. You know, so, you know, this is nice, this is cute, but it's not something that we really want representing our company. Old ways, not getting with the new program. You know, that's what I think happened. Someone in the office more or less said right there. And then they said, okay, since we are Ferrari and these people are little peons and they do have all these fans, let's just wrestle it away from them because We are the big boys. And then let's do it the way we want to do it. And then try to push this to a few of our people. But again, most of our customers probably don't necessarily have a Facebook page. But that is changing. Because you see some of these people, these higher-ups, you know, that you see in the media world that do drive Ferraris, they are pushed by their companies to have a Facebook page and, you know, Twitter and these few other things with social media. They might not necessarily even be running it, but they are pushed. So that is changing. You know, that's what I think happened here in this case. And I hope that they get compensated, just as I said. Back over to you, Sir Afro-Nerd.
Yeah, the only thing about it, and we'll move along, is that they didn't shut down his website. They just bogarted and took it over. It's like, okay,
thank you
for starting this. We'll take it over now. So they didn't have a foresight. They realized that, you know, in this new world order, you're going to have to. And also, you know, you have younger millionaires, you know, someone like the gentleman that created WhatsApp. I think his first name is Chan. You know, you can bet your bottom dollar he's going to be. You have new billionaires that are under 40. They're definitely paying attention to Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and all that kind of crap. The social media world, much even to our chagrin, and to my own personal chagrin, is almost unavoidable. Listen, I'm a Prince supporter, have been a Prince supporter for years. He has been very push and pull, which is one of his songs, very push and pull when it comes to the internet, social media. He says some negative things about it on one end because he sees the social media having, or the internet having taken away his money. But at the same time, in this new world order, these current artists rely on it to make money. You're in a world now where you can't sell physical product as far as music. They use music to establish 360 deals and garner sponsorships. I mean, when I referenced Pitbull went on and on and on about social media and how he has acquired all these sponsorships and support, you know, really based through social media. You know, if you have 500,000, 2 million, 10 million, 15 million Twitter followers, that's a corporation. That's you got to pay somebody at that level. Someone like Rihanna, who probably has 15 million Twitter followers, you can imagine if she endorses anything, you got to give money for that. That's more powerful than a record if you really want to get into it. If you got 15 million people following you, talking about at a whim, hey, I'm into this new lipstick, that one, a couple of tweets or one off-the-cuff tweet in this world of Facebook posting can make or break a company. You know, the music is just now, the music, and this is what Pitbull said, the music now is really just a reference point for ancillary product endorsement. The music is to get you in, but it's not the way it was where it's a physical station that you go into a brick-and-mortar building to buy anymore. Those days are dead. And Prince now, I see he's messing around on Twitter a little bit, reluctantly. He had a war with YouTube. Now I believe he has his own YouTube page. If someone like him, who's a notorious curmudgeon, had to concede, he had to bow down. Ferrari certainly is going to have to bow down. I just have a problem when, you know, other companies kind of saw the light and said, let's bring them on in. Like you said, bring them on in. It is what it is. But I wanted to mention it because I think it's something that's just noteworthy. All right, let's go to a quick Herb Alt groove. We got about 11 minutes remaining. More topics still, folks. Always more topics. Then, of course, remember this upcoming Saturday, we have our Grindhouse Saturday show. And undoubtedly, we will talk about Captain America, the Winter Soldier, that's coming up this Friday. So we'll definitely give you our take on it. But I suspect the grandiose Sergio Mims, shouting him out, noted film critic, not really a pulp fan, comic book fan. He says that very easily. And he talked about 3 Days of the Condor and all these other legendary films that he puts it in that same realm. For him, not a fan, to really give this a two thumbs up, I'm pretty sure we're smooth sailing on this one. All right, going to a Afropunk herb alt groove. This is Soul is Heavy. Soul is Heavy by Naneka. Naneka, we'll be right back. Let's groove.
Naja, in the loud arousal of my world, there's a secret place where I find myself. Can I find you, Biafra? The noise of horns of thirsty Nigerians, of hustlers, of mothers, come from me as I walk past Lagos. In prayer contemplation like a ghost, I feel the sorrow of a many still. I don't know how much pain it takes, Naja. I walk the island, I walk the mainland. I see diversity, I smell capacity, but still we suffer. Why? From myself, pissing no time to waste. Like Okada, we are left to hit Niger. For too long, we surrender to the ignorance of our self-defense. In you, we are filled America. How far must we walk in calamity and suppression? How long would it take for you to love Niger? As I sit here, I want to live. But there's so many plans, but we feel I can't deliver.
Folks, once again, that was Soul is Heavy by Naneka or Naneka. Towards the tail end of the program, folks, this is, of course, the Midweek in Review edition of Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk, a.k.a. Afro Nerd Radio. Still trying to give us a buzz if you like, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. You know, we always have so many topics for our meals, and we're overflowing, so we're not going to be able to get through everything. We'll pick it up this Saturday at 6 p.m. But, I was going to talk about, Captain, something that Sergio interjected on the last program, the last episode, with the Twitter beef. It kind of came and went, but it was made some noise. The Twitter beef with the Ebony editor that said something untoward, Rafi Williams, who is Juan Williams' son, Juan Williams is a liberal, but I perceive him to be more on the conservative liberal bent. He is a Fox employee, formerly of NPR, and his son is a direct conservative. He works for some conservative outfit, and I believe he's also affiliated with this new magazine venture that Armstrong Williams is connected with. I think we will address that on Saturday, but there's something that was an article, actually, that was in The Root. The Washington Post skipped Gates, Henry Louis Gates's The Root. It must be a slow news day. This is a topic that was brought up by Janae Desmond Harris. Not hard on the eyes, this young woman. Anyway, it really is a question that comes in from a white reader. And it's entitled, this piece is entitled, White Woman in a Chocolate City Shirt, Is It Wrong? I got really mad when I first heard about this thing because it seems to be nothing, but we're making it more complicated than it needs to be. And I just, even as black folk, we can't color code everything. I mean, I guess this happens on both sides of the colors, but it seems like there's a contingent of black folk that really are into colorizing their politics, and that, I guess it dovetails with what we talked about, what we'll talk about later on with how Raffy Williams was treated, that you must be liberal because it's the black thing to do. It's a color-coded notion. So this is a white woman that writes in, Captain, and essentially she belongs – she's a D.C. resident, and we know that the colloquial term for D.C., at least at one time, was Chocolate City. It's kind of a cute thing to call the city because it was predominantly or black. I don't know if that holds true today because of gentrification, but it's not unknown that Chocolate City is another term for D.C. because of the black residents. Anyway, this young woman who happens to be white is a cyclist, and she belongs to a cyclist group entitled Chocolate City Cycling, Triple C. So she's part of this cycling group. She was given a T-shirt that she likes, and she's concerned about wearing this shirt that says Chocolate City because of the racial implications. She doesn't want to be stepping on anyone's toes or confronted for wearing a shirt that she likes. So Janae Desmond Harris goes into this long diatribe, Captain, about, you know, maybe you shouldn't, maybe you should. It was just like too lengthy. I'm like, come on. Is it that serious, Captain? You don't have that much time left. I mean, we're going to have to pick this up, I suspect.
Why crazy. Why can't you just tell her, just wear whatever you want, whatever makes you feel comfortable.
And do it. cultural connection, people know what chocolate is. I mean, like 3 pages about why this girl can't simply wear a shirt that represents the cycling club that she belongs to. There's an album by Parliament called Chocolate City. I have a Chocolate City shirt myself. Suppose she was a fan of Parliament and she wore the shirt that I have. I would expect I could see a white person. I would want them to wear a Parliament shirt or a Fishbone shirt. What is the big deal? I mean, this is insanity. Black folks have lost their minds. It's a little too extra for me, Captain. I sat there. I said, I can't believe this woman wrote a 3-page op-ed. Not really giving this woman support simply because she's wearing a Chocolate City cycling shirt. I mean, maybe she can't wear it if she's going to encounter someone who's going to give her a history book. All it is like, hey, it just says, I mean, if you live in D.C., why not wear a Chocolate City shirt, irrespective of your ethnicity? Because that's the colloquial term for D.C. What's wrong, man? I just couldn't believe it. We'll have to pick this up, but I became so angry. When I said, I couldn't believe that this – people said, even some people were responding saying, it's a slow news day or something.
Yep, there you go. Exactly.
I mean, some things can't be this serious. It's a T-shirt. I don't think people will perceive her as like. I mean, the worst case scenario is she likes black people.
That's it.
A bad thing? I mean, is that a bad thing? But she said that she might get confronted by. I mean, if a white person wears Chocolate City as a T-shirt, I don't see how that's a. You know what? We have seconds remaining, Captain. We're going to have to pick this up. We'll pick it up. Any closing remarks before we get on up out of here Saturday, 6 p.m.?
It's getting to the point where a white person can't drink chocolate milk without there being a conversation on Twitter. Why was she drinking chocolate milk?
Yeah. All right, let's get on out of here, folks. It's been real. Always a pleasure. See you. Check us out Saturday at 6 p.m., the Grindhouse Show. Let's go out on some Big Daddy Kane, new Big Daddy Kane, and The Last Supper. This is Shh. See you on Saturday. Shh.
Now, baby, it seems there's been some sort of freak in my Facebook account. They run in their mouth, you might reply with shh.
Your friends, they love to gossip, always about what I get. Next time you should be silent. Girl, tell me why can't you just see that they're simply foolish. Don't let them do that to us. Now when did your friends all become a silence? Keeping me under the hot surveillance.
All they want is to witty Bobby us. Don't become straight blind and grapevines and let hate find some fake sign to play us like baselines. Tell them.
Your friends, they love to gossip. Always about what I get. Next time you should be silent. Girl, tell me why can't you just see that they're simply foolish. Don't let them do this to us.
The gossip is in the air like the wind blow. Tell you anything and you like ten folk. Been no proof she can show. Somehow it still seems the verdict is in though. Boss, your friend go was simple. She ain't been hot since 97, now she missed info. Always getting at you with different data that didn't matter. But chitter chatter to try to see her, this is shatter.